At 8:22, this is KERA News. I'm Sam Baker. Engineers from T-Mobile and officials in Dallas say they've made significant progress on the ongoing problem of so-called ghost calls that have jammed the city's 911 call center. However, it's still unclear who is at fault and whether the problem is fixed. The Dallas Morning News reports T-Mobile engineers have made some technological upgrades since they arrived Wednesday. They'll stay in town 2 more weeks to deal with any tech issues that come up. But T-Mobile officials believe their job is done. The wireless company also believes the problem isn't limited to T-Mobile phones. Meanwhile, city officials say they plan to make their own changes. They'll also add a dozen call takers a day until the issues are resolved. 2 deaths have been publicly connected to the 911 ghost call problem. Now to our Friday conversation. Texas was a very different place 2 centuries ago. It was home to roaming tribes with just a few permanent settlements. Sam Haynes leads the Center for Southwestern Studies at UT Arlington. He and a team are behind a new project mapping Native Americans in Texas. Haynes told Rick Holter the region was one of the most diverse places in America.
Sam Haynes, welcome to the Friday Conversation.
Thank you very much.
The most diverse place in America.
Right.
How so?
In the early 19th century, I think it's fair to say that Texas was among the most diverse regions in North America. Not only do you find a large Mexican population, of course, but an increasingly large Anglo population, a population of African-American slaves, and also Afro-Caribbean slaves. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, you have this remarkably diverse indigenous culture. And in the 19th century, there are perhaps 2 dozen or more distinct tribal cultures.
What does your map project illuminate kind of about that time?
What we're looking for is trying to build a database we have of sites of violence involving Native Americans, Mexicans, and Anglo-Americans in the early decades of the 19th century. The purpose of the database and the website is to track Native American mobility patterns primarily, because sadly enough, the only way to understand or to track Native American mobility is through their contact with whites and Mexicans, which usually end violently. Mm-hmm. So we have about 300 sites of violence in the database so far. By the time we get up into the 1840s, we should have, by my general estimation, about 750 sites of violence.
What's the range of types of violence that you're covering?
Well, they defy broad generalization. Our website and our database is tracking everything from raids on the Colorado River involving Indian tribes and Anglo settlers to Texas militia groups driving out immigrant tribes under the Mirabeau-Lamar Indian Removal Program. So you really can't offer any broad generalizations. Each one is distinct in its own way.
How was the Native interaction with the Mexicans and Spanish different from the interaction with the Anglos?
To answer that question, I think you need to look at how private property is seen by Hispanics and Anglo-Americans. When livestock was taken by indigenous peoples from Mexican settlements, very often there were not reprisals. When Mexican lives were lost, however, then Mexican authorities took action. When Anglo-Americans came into this region, they had very different notions of private property than Mexicans did. And when livestock was stolen, when tools were taken, then there were reprisals, and very severe ones. Anglo-Americans did not just simply attack Indian villages when Anglo lives were lost, but when private property was taken. And I think that's the main difference.
And they would attack and clear out in some cases.
That's right. There's no question that Anglo-American reprisals were far more brutal than those conducted by Mexican authorities during this period.
Why is it that textbooks in Texas don't really dig into that time period, especially about Native Americans?
In, I think, the way Texas history is usually taught, in the 1820s, we focus on almost exclusively the impresario system, Stephen F. Austin and American colonists mm-hmm. coming into Texas. We tend to forget that there are Native Americans from the United States that are coming in at exactly the same time. And in fact, when Stephen F. Austin founds his colony in the early 1820s, there are a large number of Native Americans in East Texas at that time.
And you've talked a little bit about textbooks from the last 40 or 50 years that tend to show history starting when white settlers came here.
For a very long time, this Anglo-centric narrative prevailed. And I think this is a period that most Texans think can't be studied anymore. We have learned everything there is to learn about Texas in the early 19th century. And I would argue that that's not true at all, that we really do need to do a much better job of incorporating the experiences of people of color into that history. But it's not enough really to insert people of color into that Anglo-centric narrative. I think the thing to do is really to start all over again and to rebuild the narrative from the ground up and to understand that there are large numbers of people of color who are inhabiting this region at the same time Anglo-Americans are.
Sam Haynes leads the Center for Southwestern Studies at UTA. Thanks for taking the time.
I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
And finally, the three Texas teams in the NCAA basketball tournament this year play today. That's SMU, Baylor, and Texas Southern. SMU had 16 straight wins this season. Coach Tim Jankovich says the team's excited to play USC this afternoon in Tulsa.
So happy that we were lucky enough to get a venue that was really close by so our fans could get here, but even more excited for our players, the opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament again, and, you know, after some of the heartache from last year.
The Mustangs were barred from the tournament for a year for academic fraud that cost previous coach Larry Brown his job. Baylor plays New Mexico State this morning in Tulsa. At one point this year, the Bears were ranked number one in the country. Baylor coach Scott Drew says it's tough when your season comes down to just one game.
Doesn't matter what you're seeded, what you're ranked, what people say. In 40 minutes, that's the beauty of March Madness. It's not a best out of seven series.
Texas Southern from Houston faces North Carolina, a number one seed and basketball powerhouse. In the forecast, mostly cloudy skies, a high near 81 at 69 degrees now in Dallas, 68 in Fort Worth, 59 in Wichita Falls, and 66 in Tyler.